Welcome to this tribute to Clifton J. Lachelet and his legacy. I want to first acknowledge funding support from the Ohio State College of Pharmacy Lachelet Leadership Program. I'm Sarah White, a retired director of pharmacy who has a continuing interest in effective leadership. In the early 70s, I did my master's and residency with Cliff at Ohio State, and career-wise, it was the best thing I ever did. Cliff completed his undergraduate pharmacy education at Loyola University and his master's and residency at the University of Michigan with Don and Gloria Franke. Prior to coming to Ohio State, he held leadership positions at the University of Chicago Hospitals and the University of Rochester Strong Memorial Hospital. He also served as an assistant director of ASHP and APHA's audit of pharmaceutical services in hospitals, published in 1964 as the Mirror to Hospital Pharmacy. The recommendations set forth in the Mirror are still serving as a roadmap for the evolution of health system pharmacy. In 1958, Cliff became the director of pharmacy at Ohio State University Hospitals. Prior to Cliff's recruitment, the pharmacy operated as a unit of the laboratory supply stores, with clerks filling drug baskets for the nursing units. At this point in history, most hospitals did not have a pharmacist, and nurses had bottles of drugs, ampules, and vials on their units. This drug distribution system was called a floor stock system. The College of Pharmacy dean was instrumental in getting the pharmacy moved to a regular department of the hospital and setting up an affiliation with the hospital to provide undergraduate teaching and a graduate program in hospital pharmacy to train pharmacists to work in hospitals. During Cliff's tenure, he developed innovative pharmacy services that became internationally recognized. Remember when he started, nurses were making their own IV admixtures and, in a sense, dispensing from their stock bottles and only talking to a pharmacist over the phone if one was available. He began the MS residency program in 1959 and, during his tenure, mentored 129 residents. He retired in 1983 and worked as a consultant to managed care pharmacies until he passed away in 1995. Cliff was very active in professional organizations, serving on boards of directors and as president of ASHP, APHA, and the American Managed Care Pharmacy Association. He was honored in 1968 with the Harvey A.K. Whitney Lecture Award, the highest recognition in hospital pharmacy. His lecture was entitled, As We Move Into History. This tribute will explore Cliff's leadership and legacy as lessons and tips for all of us. Now let's think about how Cliff achieved his impact so that he's even remembered today. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from several people who worked with him, but first permit me some reflections on his legacy. I think his legacy is at least twofold. First, the innovative services developed, and second, the leaders he trained, who have not only developed progressive services across the country, but also trained residents. I personally have worked with close to 100 residents in my career. Over the last several years, with my interest in leadership, I have talked with a number of Ohio State trained people because I was curious about how the Ohio State experience had enabled so many people to be successful leaders, as some of us were not necessarily the best and the brightest. The following are paraphrased reflections from people on what made Cliff a successful leader. Look for enduring lessons for yourself. I learned to push the envelope, to strive for perfection, and to never be satisfied with the status quo. Another way he functioned was to do more than what was expected and to always deliver on his commitments. His influence, even today, is indicated by this comment. I continue to ask myself, what would Cliff do? What an enduring legacy. It's not so much what I learned, but the values that I embrace that have shaped my career. The Lachalet program is now a family tree with branches all over the country and in every conceivable practice area. He allowed me to make mistakes, which was perhaps the best learning experience I ever had. And he never said, "I told you so." But we did analyze what happened and discussed ways to prevent it the next time. What have you gleaned so far that would make you more effective as a leader, even if you don't have a formal leadership title? You can have influence in your work group. Let's now look at Cliff's leadership success characteristics, which I think fall into three categories. First, he cared about what he did. Second, he cared about and developed his people. And third, he was never satisfied. Let me briefly illustrate each of these, again with paraphrasing others and my personal experience. Look for things you could do to enhance your leadership. First, he cared about what he did. He saw pharmacy as a calling, not just a job. His passion and zeal for pharmacy and the patient care meant he worked hard. I remember Cliff always being an advocate for the patient and wanting to improve the drug therapy component of their care in very practical ways. Above all, he held himself personally responsible and accountable for all of pharmacy services and what his staff did. In essence, he always placed the profession and the provision of pharmacy services above any personal interests. I learned from Cliff to appreciate how we got where we are today. In other words, our services heritage. He built on the past but innovated. He thought boldly and creatively because he wanted to expand the pharmacist's role and ensure patient safety. Cliff was never bound by convention. Who else in the late 60s would have thought about taking vacant nursing positions and developing pharmacy-coordinated unit dose and medication administration, using pharmacy technicians to do the patient administration? The clinical pharmacist supervised the technician, and as a resident, I worked as a clinical pharmacist, and I found it to be a very tight system. If the patient missed a dose, was off the unit, for example, it was the clinical pharmacist who made the decision, based on the drug, what the appropriate action would be. Likewise, at the end of each shift, I verified that every scheduled dose had been administered, or a note on the MER indicated the reason why not, and if appropriate, I contacted the physician. In addition to caring about what he did, Cliff cared about and developed his people. He had high expectations of himself and others. I found he gave people more than they thought they could handle, which developed their confidence. Cliff inspired people to reach down deep and give their best effort by doing so himself as a role model. I remember his attitude that has served me well in my career regarding new things. He would say, "Just go get the skills and knowledge you don't have, as things will always change during your career, and you can do anything you put your mind to." An approach I picked up was his intent not to clone himself nor build an Ohio State empire, but to develop people's own unique competencies that would sustain them throughout their careers, no matter what they did. Cliff would never take all the credit himself for successes, but was good at investing it in his people. So after caring about what he did and about his people, Cliff was never satisfied. Even after he retired, he would ask me what I was doing about whatever the current issue was every time he would see me at a meeting. He first thought about what the right thing to do was, as opposed to worrying about whether he had the resources or support to do it. He always seemed to be thinking about ideas from all perspectives. I have found his philosophy, "first commit to it and worry about how later," to be a key in my career. He always encouraged us to customize services to the needs of our patients and not just take the OSU model and superimpose it, as every place is unique. He was a great strategist who thought about how it would impact others by doing his homework so he was prepared when he proposed changes. Cliff always had a backup plan, which was acceptable, and he knew when to use it. as opposed to going down in flames, holding on to Plan A if he couldn't get Plan A. So what can you do to improve your caring about what you do, the people you work with, and never being satisfied? Cliff's legacy not only includes the services he developed, but the leaders he trained. As of 2009, counting Cliff, residents, and Ohio State staff, 9 have been ASHP president, 6 have received the Whitney Award, 3 have been APHA president, and several have served as president of ACCP, the American College of Clinical Pharmacists, AACP, the American Association of Colleges of Pharmacy, and ACPE, the American Council of Pharmaceutical Education. In 2009, the residency program celebrated its 50th anniversary. The following perspectives were recorded at the reunion. First, we're going to hear Harold Godwin reflect on developing services with Cliff during the 60s as he was an assistant director after completing his MS residency. Finally, we're also going to hear from several randomly selected people who were either residents or staff with Cliff. You will hear me asking questions off camera. Listen for aspects that you can apply in your practice.
Well, thank you, and it's certainly my pleasure to be here, and I forgot about that videotape. I do remember fond memories of being there, but I kind of forgot about that. This is really, how many of you were born before 1969? I don't know if you're in the minority, so am I. Okay. I really like these pictures because it does show I did have hair. But at any rate, so we look at the decade of the 60s. What were they? What was the world around us? Well, JFK assassination, Martin Luther King assassination, Robert Kennedy assassination, Vietnam, the draft lottery numbers. I was 322, thank God. All my classmates were enrolling with Milt Skolot in the Public Health Service, right out of the residency program at that particular time. But it also was the man on the moon. Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, Medicare started, and Woodstock happened. So certainly those were turbulent times, but those were really changing times. And I guess that takes me to the decade of the 60s in hospital pharmacy, because indeed they were changing times. Just a year or so before that, though, Cliff Lachelet, 1958, rather, became the new director of pharmacy at OSU Hospitals. And he came from Michigan, where he had completed the audit of the pharmaceutical services in hospitals through a PHS grant, and that turned out to be a published book, The Mirror to Hospital Pharmacy, in 1964. Now, many of you all thought The Broken Mirror came first, but it really didn't. It was a reference to The Mirror, and we all celebrate the Broken Mirror. I think Leon Viteska had something to do with that, back in that particular era. But Cliff comes to OSU, and it has never been anything like it since. Interesting, though, to talk about The Mirror to Hospital Pharmacy, and I don't know how many of you have actually ever seen it. It's a blue bound volume. But it was sad, but it was really heartening, because Phil Schneider and Mary Alice Bennett and myself went to Cliff's house after Cliff had died in 1995 and helped Jane essentially clean out his office. And there we found The Mirror to Hospital Pharmacy. And in that, he had post-it notes, modern day, sticking out of the edges of it with when these things had accomplished. And so predicting unit dose, predicting clinical pharmacy, predicting, a pharmacy and therapeutics committee, predicting things like that. And so that mirror is at the ASHP headquarters in their archives now. But I thought putting those things together, that was uniquely Cliff, because something just didn't get finished and he forgot about it, but he really retained that. And I guess that's the legacy that we're really talking about. Well, he came in 60. I guess I'll start with the first year. And it was total floor stock, no 24-hour service, a few pharmacists. And that's the first thing that he really started to work on. And many of you had thesi to do that all dealt with stability and quality and all of that. And I think that it may have really come from Cliff's era, I guess, in being in Michigan, where they did a lot of manufacturing. a little bit known, they were still making IVs in bottles in the 1970s at the University of Michigan. Thank God we didn't. We figured out we could buy it better than we could probably blow ourselves up with autoclaves and, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. But Cliff really started with quality. And he had Ben Holland, actually was director of operations in 1960, and Andy Anderson, you may or may not have met Andy Anderson. What a fine gentleman, past president of ASHP, past Whitney Award winner, and certainly a colleague of Cliff, because in 1961, Cliff at that time was president of ASHP. So like Paul Parker, you know, was really essentially saying Cliff was never there. So thank God he had Andy and he had Ben, you know, to kind of keep the thing going, you know, pretty well. So he really started, you know, with quality. And in 1961, per, you know, what we really have here, the idea gelled. And so we started the residency program, and Melvin Simon was the first resident. Melvin here today? That's a joke, because we have not seen Melvin, I don't think, since he had that picture taken and it was posted. And truly, it's like, where's Waldo? I mean, you know, if anybody finds him, why, let us know. I mean, we need to give him an award or something. I mean, because he's been incognito for quite a while. But anyway, he was the first resident. But Cliff always focused on quality, and we really did have to manufacture a lot of things. And you can't believe, there was not such a thing as 70% alcohol. I mean, so we started with 95 or 100% alcohol and had the diluter. We needed big, big vats. You know, we did that. We made hydrogen peroxide. We made 0.25% acetic acid for a bladder irrigation and all of that. And but the thing is, everything had a worksheet. You know, double check. Everything had a lot number on it. And not only that, Cliff was a nutcase on labeling, because if we'd have a bottle, literally the bottle went into a little kind of a plexiglass slide deal. So you put the label on at the same height and in the same position for everything that you made. So when all these bottles were on a shelf, you know, it looked like they were really coming out of a manufacturer. So, you know, that was unique, but I think it really does point to his, you know, excellence in quality, and that really went, you know, all the way through. Well, we putted along with that, started the residency program. Andy Anderson started a drug information center, 6 books and a couple of, you know, journals and files and all of that by therapeutic category and file, tear, file. But, you know, it was one of the beginnings, essentially, of that. And then Larry Schaup, in 1963, started a unit dose pilot program on 10 East. And that was unique and that was novel. We didn't have any unit dose packaging then, essentially. It was like a little, like nursing homes that we know today, the little cupule kind of things that you've got to package. He did start IV admixtures, essentially, as the, I mean, I guess, is a unit dose, but he only did the LVPs, and so that became my shoulder to figure out how to do piggybacks a year or so later. But Larry really kind of started that, and Larry also started the first direct physician's order form. So no carbon required. First models that he had actually had carbon paper in it. You know what carbon paper is? You don't know what carbon paper is. But at any rate, no carbon required was magic. I mean, you didn't have to have 3 sheets. You only had to have the 2. And so literally we were now receiving orders, you know, that were the physician's handwriting rather than being nurse transcribed. We did convert, before we got to Unidose, to a 5-day supply, essentially called the individual order system, in which most patients were there 5 days, and so if they were on anything, we'd give them a 5-day supply. So if it was BID, we'd give them 10. If it was QD, we'd give them 5. If it was, you know, TID, we'd give them 15. So we had all these things prepackaged, lot numbers on every one of them. Well, the problem is, and Cliff, such a nutcase again on quality, it's like when the patient hopefully didn't expire, but if they did, or if they went home, or the order was changed, all this stuff comes back that was prepacked. Well, Cliff says you got to put it all back by lot number, you know. So I think our stock of credits and lot numbers far, far exceeded the, you know, our original stock. And so you're great for quality, but it's kind of nut for, to really do that. So in 1964, opportunity arose for a nuclear pharmacy. And so that's when the nuclear pharmacy program started. Gary Edwards, many of you may know him, started that whole particular program. And then in 1965 was an ASHP conference here in Columbus, and it was to talk about this, Jerry, and it was to really talk about, there were standards in ASHP at that time called internships, But we were, I guess we were called residents, but for some reason the standards were kind of an internships. Now, you kind of said you had one and you did it, and DePaul Parker would compare Kentucky to, you know, and we'd compare to Michigan, and all, but there was no accreditation at all. So literally the fundamental thing in 1965 was to establish standards nationally, call it a residency, and start the accreditation process. And so all of that really kind of started with SHP, but, you know, in Columbus, Ohio. And then, I guess 1966, I joined the residency program in 1964, because we had that crazy thing to do as a thesis. And so, you know, I don't know whether I really selected it or I just got, you know, assigned by Cliff. But anyway, it was IV admixtures. And so implementing an IV admixture program, you know, throughout the house and to do a pilot. Now, Larry had kind of started it, but we think about IV admixtures, lots of things. One, we had an amber glove box, no fan or anything in it. It was just a box that hopefully didn't get contaminated. I mean, we didn't know anything about a laminar flow hood at that time. So I think we bought the first laminar flow hood. That was a part of my project. I copied Larry's NCR, you know, direct order form so that I could get original orders of these. And so then we thought, okay, we're going to start this IV admixture program. But we're going to do, I did a survey and I thought, it's really interesting. The potassiums and the LVPs and all of that like are one a day. These things called Keflin and Cefazolin, they're 5 and 6 times a day. We weren't doing those because nursing was putting them in a Buretrol. It's a little plastic kind of thing that they used to use in pediatrics. And so nurses would kind of, you know, fill it up, squirt the stuff in it, and away we would go because the nurses were mixing all the IVs. So Cliff says, how are you going to do that? It beats the hell out of me. So I thought, you know, I don't think we're going to be buying Buretrols in these big sets and filling them up. So we had the idea, what about getting a little bitty bottle, maybe 50 cc's or 100 cc's, and we would put all of those things in that, the Keflins and so forth. Great idea. They didn't make it. But Cliff went out on a limb and essentially intermittent therapy, a whole new drug delivery system, was literally invented, you know, at OSU in collaboration with each other, I guess. And so we ordered like 50 to 100 cases, literally, of IV fluids, but the smallest bottle I had then was 250. So here we had 50 mils in a 250 glass bottle, and that was the beginning of the mini bottle. And so that's why often early on they were called underfills. I mean, you know, there were more air in there than there really was, you know, liquid. But we'd hang a Y set, nurse would do that. We were making piggybacks like crazy, and, you know, and away we went. And so we really started the whole program like that. And, it's, you know, we never looked back from that standpoint. Cliff said, well, I wonder whether a technician can do this. Technicians were storekeepers. I wonder if they could do that. I said, well, I don't know. We'll give it a try. So literally for 2 months on my program, we took Cliff's secretary, Judy Long, if anybody remembers Judy. Say, okay, Judy, we've got a new little job description here for you. You know, you sit in this laminar flow hood and see if you can make these things, and, you know, we do some cultures and all that, and can you do reconstitution? So we did. So out of that whole study, you know, we really did the IV admixture program, and it, you know, went gangbusters from there. And I guess the notoriety of that was so successful. And I'll get to that in a minute, but essentially we put on, you know, many, many, many training sessions that all, you know, really came out of that particular program. 1967, Cliff had the idea, well, we need to be upstairs now because we found out all these things that were happening when we did the unit dose pilot, and now we're doing IV ads. That there's, you know, we think we know what's going on in the pharmacy, but we really don't. It's all happening upstairs. And so we created the liaison pharmacist program. So what we did is assign a pharmacist to every nursing unit, and it was their responsibility to go visit every day. Hi, how are you? You know, I'm Charlie the pharmacist. You know, what can I do? Not much clinical stuff at that time, but it really did set the stage for the visitation and how we really started, you know, that whole particular program. And so that was in 1967. And in early 67, I started then as an assistant director. I finished the program. And I'll just say to the young people and probably everybody even here that there is such a thing as serendipity, and that is you have to take advantage of, you know, opportunities that present themselves, whether you know that or not. But anyway, I got a call into Cliff's office, right, at being a new assistant director, and he says, you know, Dean Parks just called me. He says, Notari's going on vacation, or vacation, sabbatical, and Notari teaches two courses, And Park says, send one of your young guys over here to, you know, bail us out. I was the young guy. So it turned out that I had to end up teaching dispensing lab, and I also had to teach an OTC course. But the other thing, and several of us walked by it today, you didn't even know there was one, an old school pharmacy. It's up on Neal Avenue. So not only that, I found out that was the summer they were moving. So now I had to move all that junk out of the lab into the new school of pharmacy, develop a whole new dispensing lab, and teach OTCs. And then Cliff wanted to know why I wasn't around. You know, I mean, because he was gone as much as I was. But knowing Cliff, he says, now this isn't going to be a compounding thing you're going to do. I go, huh? And he says, this has got to be a clinical dispensing lab. What the hell is a clinical dispensing lab? I spent my whole summer making out patient profiles and fake prescriptions and getting drug samples in, you know, and all of that. To do all of that one-on-one, so all of these students essentially had their own patients, you know, they had their own profile. And so Cliff was very happy about that. And this clinical pharmacy in the community level. And I think even today, we still don't have electronic medical record, do we? Or we still don't have, you know, full patient profiles really on everybody. But it was really a beginning there. But the serendipity is why I've been, I guess, a professor all the rest of my career. Because when I interviewed for Kansas, I said, yeah, I'm director of pharmacy, but I like a faculty appointment. And so professor and associate dean and all that. So I've always been engaged, you know, with that teaching. Now, the teaching paid off, and I will say, because it created a liaison with the students to our program or to other programs. In my very first class, we had, I think, some very notable names. We had Mick Hunt, who was one of my first students in this undergraduate class, who's gone on, you know, to this, president of ASHP. Rosalie Seagraves was in that particular class, dean at Illinois. Tim Webster, now deceased, but Tim Webster essentially was the CEO and the exec of ASCAP, the consulting pharmacist organization, and our very own Mary Alice Bennett, you know, who has created her own empire, I guess, if you will, here with community pharmacy residency programs and MTM. And now she finds herself, and if you haven't already, vote early and vote often, because she's on the ballot for APHA president now as well. So there's my first four students, you know, out of that particular class. And so I think that really shows how that impact and that liaison really can kind of connect all the dots from that standpoint. Well, admixtures flourished, unit dose kind of flourished. And I am really proud to say that, you know, along the way, Cliff got a lot, and I think it extends today, Cliff got a lifetime exemption from the fire marshal for skids in the hallway. And so, you know, we have a look back, you know, on that one, and I saw that, you know, very well today. But anyway, in 1968, and I'll go on from there, 1968, there was a tremendous nursing shortage at Ohio State. 30% of the beds were going to be closed. And so I remember if Cliff says, okay, we're all meeting in my house today. So we had a retreat in 68. Sit down, and Cliff says, you know, all the problems are on the nursing unit. They give the wrong drugs. We've got missing doses. We've got all that stuff. Let's put together a program called the Coordinated Drug Administration Program with the Unit Dose Program. And essentially, that brainchild was in 68. You know, we did it. Cliff says, what I want out of that is I want all those vacant nursing positions as far as the money goes. And so we hired two nurses. Hired a boatload of techs, boatload of new pharmacists, and really put it together, and that went on, you know, for essentially about 20 years. So, I mean, it really did set the stage from that whole standpoint. The last thing that I will comment on is we often affectionately call it the bag shows, and that is that because we were really ahead of the game, I think, in producing IV admixtures, thanks to Travenol and Bill Salen, who was, you know, on the program there, was shown to be on the program at the 25th, Ed Baxter, vice president, very, very far-thinking person. We probably trained over, I don't know, thousands of pharmacists, because it wasn't included in school. It was a nursing responsibility, and it was the transition to becoming a pharmacist responsibility. This thing went on for about 15 years. And so we had lots of teams. I mean, we had, you know, we had Cliff, Roger Anderson, Bill Miller, Larry Shop, Tony Bonacci, Sarah White, Paul Abramowitz, Paul Pierpotti. We had a whole list of people, myself included, you know, that really participated on us for a number of years. And we almost called ourselves the OSU Baxter University, you know, to put all of these things on. But not only did we talk about IV admixtures and IV aseptic technique, But also, we really dealt with enhancing your P&T committee, in chemotherapy compounding, quality assurance, all of those other kind of things, you know, that really help propel, I think, you know, the profession. Now, we're all lucky we didn't lose our jobs because we're gone all the time, you know, on affectionately on the bag shows. But anyway, so that kind of ended 1969. And as a postscript, Cliff became president then of APHA in 1972. And in 1993, he was president of the American Managed Care Pharmacy Association. So he really was president of three national organizations. So in summary, the 60s were the decade of innovation, progress, and change for hospital pharmacy. We had new distribution systems were invented, clinical practice begins, drug administration program was initiated and evaluated, the ASHP mid-year began during that decade, and residency education really started with accreditation and it matured. And Cliff literally was at the forefront of all of those particular activities. He was a visionary, he was extraordinarily creative, dedicated to the profession, inspiring, a mentor, and a friend. He always liked Woody Hayes, and he always liked Vince Lombardi, and he was always saying, win one for the Gipper. And I think that his true goal was, at that time and always was, that he really wanted his people to infiltrate and to be directors of pharmacy in major medical institutions or university hospitals to really continue to create that legacy of Ohio State. And so he always stood for enthusiasm for excellence and the big E, as we really called it, and he demanded it from all of us. And so in last statement, I think that David Kovance, in his Clifton J. Lachelet Award presentation this last December, appropriately stated it when he said, essentially, Cliff and the program left an indelible mark on all of us. And I think we all should be very proud of that. Thank you.
Sonia, after completing your MS residency, you stayed on as an assistant director and led the Pharmacy Technician Medication Administration Program. Tell us about working with Cliff.
Okay. I'll start out by telling you a little incident when I came for my interview in March of 1968, where after discussing many things, Cliff said to me, I'm not interested in mediocrity. And fortunately, I replied, if I were interested in mediocrity, I would stay where I was. That was one of his basic philosophies, and he wanted to see excellence in everybody's performance. Another of his main themes was to talk to people when you were having a meeting and stress what was important to them, not particularly what was important to you. For instance, if there were a pharmacy program you wanted to get started and you went to a physician, you didn't say anything about cost saving. You talked about improving medical care. And on the other side, if you went to the administrator, you didn't talk about improving medical care, you talked about cost saving. And that is something that you can use not only in your pharmacy leadership, but also in your daily life. And the third thing that I remember is that he did not want to keep you and build an empire just at Ohio State. He wanted you to go out into the field and improve pharmacy care for other patients in other institutions. And because of that, he started the unit dose distribution and administration program where trained pharmacy technicians were up on the nursing unit 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, administering all medications except IVs and treatment drugs. And that led into establishing the clinical pharmacy program because it provided a reason for having a pharmacist on the floor, ostensibly for supervising the pharmacy technicians, but also to get familiar with the nursing staff and the medical staff and provide pharmacy clinical services to them through the unit dose administration program. Those are just some of the major things that I learned from him, and it served me well for the last 40 years. Thank you.
You completed the MS residency. You stayed on as an assistant director. How would you characterize Cliff's leadership?
Well, Cliff was to me the ultimate leader, really. He led by example. He challenged us on a continual basis for striving for something more, something progressive, and something of high quality. He was a real nitpicky guy on quality and the image that you portray as a leader to your own people and to outside the pharmacy department. So I have to characterize him as somebody that really was looking ahead and wanting to see the profession of pharmacy and the department of pharmacy in an institution recognized for such quality standards and perfection, really, in all that we do.
Give us a story about how that nitpicky and how you learned that.
Well, for one thing, and as you indicated, I came as assistant director, and to me, and I had done my residency at Grant Hospital, it was kind of like a second residency. So even during my position as assistant director, I felt like I was still in the residency program. One of the things he did with correspondence was that all of the staff, all of the assistant directors that issued correspondence to other people throughout the institution, those copies were put in a folder and distributed around the group, including to him. And one of the stories for the nitpicky part is that when you would get that folder back, and it had been through all the other people, but also Cliff, he would be circling in red some of the things that you didn't have maybe as well done as you should have done. Or it could have even been a typo or a spelling or something like that.
And why is that valuable to you the rest of your career?
Well, it has. It absolutely has followed me the rest of the career. The rest of my career, I have always forced myself before I let something go to be sure that it doesn't have one of these problems with it. And then I've tried to, in my residence that I've had over the years, instill that same thing. And I think it's the image thing. It's the image that you are really the best that you can be, and you don't want to have something minor detract from that.
What do you think Cliff's professional legacy is?
Well, to me, his legacy really is to constantly strive to have the very best contemporary pharmacy practice model. We do a lot of talking today about practice model, and I keep thinking back, that's really what Cliff was doing continuously throughout his entire career, is advancing the practice model. Not just individual pieces of it, which were very important, but the overall practice model and what pharmacists can do and can be, and incorporating not only the distributive things that need to be done, but the clinical aspects as well. But one of the things that he always did stress was, there's no sense of having the very best clinical consultation if you couldn't get that tablet there within 6 hours or something like that. So I think his legacy really is to see practice of pharmacy move ahead continuously, never be satisfied with the way it is today, and have the role of the pharmacist continue to advance. It's the continuous process that I think is his legacy, rather than just getting something going and then be happy with it. You're always moving forward.
So what are some of the milestones of services that Ohio State developed?
Oh, I can think of many because I was there relatively early, not the earliest of the in the program, but certainly the centralized IV admixture program. I was very much involved with my fellow staff members, Harold Godwin, and others developing the centralized IV admixture program. We were involved with the IV admixture seminars that went across the United States some 200 times, I think. Then I think of particularly my own responsibilities in the sterile products area. Some of the early things we did with sterile product manufacturing, the anti-lymphocyte globulin that we made for kidney transplant anti-rejection product, and also I was involved with one of the earliest nuclear pharmacy applications within the pharmacy department, which is still across the country today quite rare. Many times they're not in the pharmacy department. Other than that, the medication administration program, that has to be recognized as one of the most forward-thinking type of practices that was put into place for many, many years. And again, I just have to come back to the legacy, and it relates to the fact that continually the residency program has continued to put real competent pharmacists into leadership positions throughout the country today. And I have to give that legacy credit to Cliff for doing that. And then each of us that have gone into places have started residency programs, and then we've advanced it that way as well. So there are so many, but I think those are some that stand out in my mind.
Talk a little bit about the seminars, the IV admixture seminars, what those were all about, what the value was.
Well, what they were was a hands-on seminar. And several of the staff members from Ohio State and other places at that point, because people had moved on, would go for a day and a half seminar where we actually would give lectures as to how to do an admixture program, but then physically how to make IV admixtures. And we had a kit, and we would have the participants at the seminar actually compound maybe a dozen or so different IV admixtures using different techniques. And it was fantastic, and in some cases, we could tell it was the first time that some of those pharmacists had actually done that. And as I said, I don't even know the total count anymore, but well over 200 times that program was conducted throughout the country. And I have to believe, and I think most of everybody else would believe too, that it launched the centralized IV admixture concept more than anything else or any other organization. To get those programs going, and again, to have the quality in those programs that we talked about in those seminars.
Excellent, sir. Thank you. Jeff, your career has included being a director of pharmacy and most recently working in the pharmaceutical industry. How did the Ohio State program prepare you to be successful?
Yeah, well, you know, I think when I go back, got 80 to 82 when I was in the program, the one thing that I learned pretty quickly was that Cliff set a pretty high bar for people to realize that you're going to be coming to this program to be trained how to do certain things, but he instilled a strong sense of personal obligation that once you developed that training, you needed to go out and apply that in situations that can kind of help to kind of promote appropriate drug use in other institutions. And, you know, at first it wasn't something you really appreciated until you got further into the program and realized that there was so much you could do with these skills and this orientation that you picked up. So after leaving OSU and going over to, you know, Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, it was the first chance for me now to actually put some of those skills to use. And it certainly found out early on that the training that was delivered to the Ohio State program with the great faculty and staff gave you a confidence that you could actually accomplish things. And in many times, confronting issues you'd never been confronted with before, because the training around here was just so perfect for that. I can remember my first experience when Cliff had assigned something to me that was going to be going to hospital administration, and he was off on travel. He came back, took a look at the project I put together, and then put it in the outbox to go down to his hospital administrator. And I remember saying, well, where's that going? Oh, it's going down to my administrator, you know, for approval. And then I realized, boy, I'm being held accountable. And that was the type of thing the program gave us. So, you know, Sloan Kettering gave me a chance to put down at the place, and then my first big job down at the University of Pennsylvania Health System was another opportunity. In every case, I was confronted with new challenges, new obstacles that allowed me to go back to that training and realize that you just need to find new ways to do things. Now, when I joined the industry after a decade at the University of Pennsylvania, I went into a group called Market Innovation, and my job there was to look over the horizon at things that the industry needed to be looking at to be successful in any of the new challenges that they're going to be facing. And what it required me to do is work across many different departments to get the whole company to realize that there was more than a physician in an office practice responsible for writing prescriptions. There were things we could do with large health plans to improve adherence rates, improve the treatment of depression, some of these other therapeutic areas that we have a lot of experience with the company I'm with. And now I'm heading up a new group called Strategy and Innovation. And it was basically born out of the fact that we're doing some new creative things now to help patients use medications more appropriately. And when I thought back to really what I got out of OSU, if I really had to capsulize it, it was this strong professional need to lead in terms of new ways of doing things as well as developing people, but then to innovate in how we do things. And it's kind of appropriate now to be in this role because that's exactly what I've been given the liberty to do within my own company. And people now are starting to realize that the industry needs to look differently if we're going to bring real value to patients who use our products, physicians who prescribe our products, and health plans who position them within formularies. But it goes beyond just the pill and the capsule and the tablet itself to those services that you wrap around. And I wouldn't have been able to get the company really embrace that or create this new division if it hadn't been for all that history and experience I got from those different places that I had a chance to practice what I learned here at Ohio State.
You said to me in the past that the Ohio State program changed your life. Would you elaborate on that for us?
Certainly. So when I came to Ohio State, I was a practicing hospital pharmacist in a small community hospital in the state of New Hampshire. And my exposure to advanced hospital practice was extremely limited. My knowledge really in many ways of the greater hospital pharmacy community was extremely limited as well. And coming to Ohio State literally did change everything. We got the exposure to a national platform. We were able to embody all the things that Cliff built in the program for so many years. Really just learned so many things on project management, on development of people, on development of programs, on advancing pharmacy. It was truly a life-changing experience.
Now, did Cliff stay as a mentor to you once you finished the program?
So I was in the class that came to Ohio State the day that Cliff retired. And he actually did stay very much in touch with us. We were able to go spend time socially with him. I was actually able to play a couple rounds of golf with Cliff, actually, and learned a lot from him about that as well. But he did stay very much in touch with us. He always enjoyed having us with him, and he did provide a lot of good things to us. He really spoke a lot to us as residents.
How would you characterize his leadership?
I think his leadership was very genuine. I think he walked the talk on everything that he did. He was the kind of person who you knew what was expected of you. He wanted to hold you to that. He was also the kind of person that if he saw you struggling, I think he would definitely support you and get you where you needed to be in your growth pattern. He never seemed to be the kind of person that was afraid to tell you his opinions on things and what his opinions could help you do something. I just think he was really the epitome of a leader, there's no question.
When you were in the military and sort of mid-career when you came to Ohio State, what was the impact of the program on your career and your assessment of Cliff Lachelet?
It had a tremendous influence on my career, more than I probably anticipated. I always felt there was a need for me to get a master's in residency to enhance my career within the Air Force. But what I found when I got here was Cliff was a very strong leader. He encouraged his people to be the best that they could be. And that was very important, I think, to all of us. You see that with the residents, all the residents, not just what I experienced. I think he maintained a steadfast goal throughout all of the time that he was with the Ohio State program, and that was to improve the safe use of drugs. Very important to him and to all of us. And you've seen the enhancements over the years through all the different people who have graduated. He also was, very uniquely, I think, a master of patient-centered innovation, which was really a very, very rare trait in people, had the skills. And I can give one that I have some very first-hand knowledge about, and probably few of you know, but Cliff was a pioneer in pharmacy management information systems. There was no inpatient pharmacy management system before Cliff and the group here designed it, developed it, and implemented it, and used it. The first one in America. The only other pharmacy management system was outpatient at the Group Health Cooperative in Seattle, Washington. Cliff later, after he refined it, He gave it to the United States government. And at the time, I was on the staff, the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, and in charge of pharmacy management information systems. And he gave it to them for free. And to the wisdom of the government, they required so much lawyering to be done that the government wound up paying $76 for the lawyer and the contracts and things to protect the government from this free offer. Some things never change.
Marva, you have been a pharmacist at Ohio State for a number of years. Talk about what it was like to work with Cliff and develop all the programs at Ohio State.
Well, when I first started, Cliff was a very vague person because he was always traveling. He'd been an officer in APHA, he was an officer in ASHP, he was an officer in FIP and traveled a lot. And I remember his bringing back a lot of visitors from these tours, and some were from Belgium, some were from Asia, some were from Japan, and we were showing them how hospital pharmacy was practiced in Columbus, Ohio. When we were preparing the unit dose drug administration program, Cliff was a lot more evident around the department. We were all concerned that the program go well, and he was very instrumental in bringing in pharmaceutical manufacturers to improve some of the unit dose packaging, made many suggestions to them, which were adopted. And I remember the day that the program started, it was April 21st, 1969, and we were all there for 24 hours that first day to make sure everything went perfectly. And so I got to know Cliff pretty well at times like that. He was a fairly shy person to the staff. I think he was much more outspoken to his assistant directors and his residents. I know the residents got many papers, many monographs, and many P&T minutes back with a lot of red writing on them. And they knew that his expectations were of excellence. Although I never saw him dispense a tablet or fill an IV, he knew what was going on in the department, and he was often there early in the morning. I remember he came in at 4 a.m. and did nursing unit rounds and found one technician asleep and one technician reading a book. And so we all heard about that, and that didn't happen again. I remember one morning we had a fire in the Lincoln Tower, the Twin Towers over there, and there were several students who were killed and several students who were burned. And one of the students was one of our interns, and he at that time was in the emergency department coordinating what medications were needed. Another memory is the time that the riots were on campus, and this was when there was the incident at Kent State. And many of our students were tear gassed as they tried to enter campus, and in fact a couple of our technicians were too. And again, he was in early in the morning in the emergency department, and I can remember him carrying down a case of 5% sodium bicarb to wash the tear gas out of everybody's eyes. So. To his staff, he was quiet spoken, but his ideas and visions became ours to enact and enhance. It was a very exciting time to be a hospital pharmacist.
Mary Alice, early in your career, you were a pharmacist in the newly developed clinical pharmacy program. You've told me in the past that it was a magical time. Could you elaborate on that?
Certainly, and I do look back on that as a very magical time in my career. It was a time when clinical pharmacy was starting. I had the opportunity to open the 8th and 9th floor to unit dose and pharmacists rounding with physicians. And I felt like Cliff was the Wizard of Oz, and he stood behind the curtain and made all these things happen. It would just seem like magic. And I think when I look back on it, the incredible part of the time was that everybody was so positive. Everybody believed that we could do what it was we were setting out to do. And I'm sure there were places where there was lots of doubt and gnashing of the teeth. But I feel like everybody believed in what we were doing, believed we could do it. I never doubted for a minute that we could do what we were setting out to do. We were surrounded by incredible leaders that Cliff had trained. I think of people like Harold Godwin and Roger Anderson and Larry Schaup and Sarah White. And it was just, I just felt like I was at Disneyland and I was having the opportunity of a lifetime.